Here's what you just missed on the Indo Daily.
It is official. Simon Harris is the country's new Taoiseach and the youngest ever leader of this country.
When it comes to hate crimes, we see every couple of months there might be a shocking attack on a gay person, and then the conversation starts again. We need hate speech legislation. The other part of society says, well, this is an infringement of my freedom of speech. I'm not happy with it at all.
This is continually happening where developers are going through the correct processes, getting planning permission and ending up stalled down the High Court.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery and Luke Fitzgerald.
So he goes back a better player from this experience, and he'll have a few extra quid in his pocket, so, and possibly a medal in his pocket. It's a great move for him. It's good for Leinster in some ways, but in other ways, and I think I'm more leaning this way, I don't like it for Leinster either. I think the homegrown talent that they have, I really feel like they might curtail some of these things.
Every week on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you like that or not, that's a fact. Like, I didn't see that money. That didn't come into my pocket. It didn't come into Ayr setup. Ayr setup was no different to most counties. But unfortunately, we have this narrative in GAA, particularly football, that no, we shouldn't really look towards getting better and looking at the things they've done to get better. What we'll do is we look for excuses.
Hello and welcome to this week's throw-in with Dublin legend Philly McMahon. Well, as Dublin and Meath prepare to face each other in Sunday's Leinster semi-final, Meath boss Andy McEntee has previously suggested that splitting Dublin is something that has to be considered to counter the Dubs' dominance in Leinster and the football championship in general. Now, it's an argument that has quietly retreated since the Dubs lost their All-Ireland crown last year and were relegated to Division 2, but it's sure to raise its head again during the summer if the Dubs are successful again. So, for this week's podcast, Philly and the Irish Independent's Conor McKeown set out to counter the argument that says population size or finances have anything to do with the Dublin GAA's superiority over the last decade.
I suppose as a player, when I was listening to small snippets of this argument around Dublin's dominance and, you know, the finances and the population and stuff like that, it was something that I certainly, and certainly the players within that camp, didn't really take huge notice of, because we knew what it took to win an All-Ireland. We knew how hard it was. We knew all the pieces that had to come together for us to be successful every year that we did it. And it was interesting to hear players that have won All-Irelands. A lot of them would kind of dismiss the whole argument around population and finance. And then you had the odd one or two jumping in saying, you know, it's too much. We need change and stuff like that. The probably disappointing thing for me was that there was definitely teams and players and individuals from other counties that didn't win All-Irelands who were entitled to their opinion by all means. But it's very hard to give your opinion on something like that if you have never really got to that space, or, you know, you haven't really found what it takes to get to there. For you to be dismissive and say, yeah, you got there because of money and you got there because of your population. I'm sure there's loads of different arguments for it, but for me, it's I could never put my finger on how I benefited financially to help me win All-Ireland, how I benefited from the population. And look, I suppose I'm just coming from my experiences. Like, I come from a club, a small club, right? People think Ballymacgillicuddy is a very big club because of the representation we have at Dublin. It's not. It's a small club. Yet we compete every year. Yet we have a high representation of Dublin players. And yet we've won Dublin championships. We won a Leinster. And there's loads of examples. You go through the club scene. You go through Kerry, Kilkenny, the All Blacks. You name it in terms of population. But for me, it can be disrespectful for the clubs, the coaches, the individuals, for all of that work they've put in to narrow it down to those two things for me.
Okay, let's just have a listen now to what Colin Cooper said 2 years ago.
We're reaching a tipping point here, and I think there's an acceptance of that across the country that the Dubs could go on here and win 10 in a row. I think we are reaching that point. I think people are genuinely concerned. You can talk about the venues. You can talk about the financial support that they get. That's all been documented before. We need a whole night to go through that sort of stuff. But I just wonder what sort of appetite are the people, maybe at the top of the GAA, are they satisfied where the game is going? Are they satisfied with how the competition is, or is the gap widening, Des? And I think it probably is, and the evidence is there. If you look what Dublin have won matches by in 2020, they've won by 17 points, averaging in campaigns, 14 points in 2019, 13 points in 2018. Dublin people will say, well, the finals have been close and there's been a point and replays and different things, and that's okay, but that's one game over a season. Mm. And a couple of weeks' time, we'll see how that goes. But I think there is genuine concern, and I think we are reaching a really, really critical point in that juncture.
And when you refer to the GA there, you think something needs to be changed. Is it?
I just wonder about the strategy. Is there an appetite here to maybe relook at the financing? Do other counties need more support? Like, there's no doubt that they've received huge, huge financial support. Mm. Okay, and they've probably created a monster by doing that. And Dublin have operated fantastically.
So he just mentioned there, Conor, about it being a tipping point. What does that tipping point look like now in 2022?
Well, I don't know. I was never really taken with any of these arguments, because people would generally throw them out when Dublin won, and then they could say, well, you know, Dublin dominance is bad for, and I suppose the cause celeb here is the weaker counties. But like, say, for instance, you split Dublin tomorrow, or say, for instance, you just got rid of Dublin altogether from the football championship tomorrow. The beneficiaries of that aren't going to be the weaker counties. The beneficiaries of that are going to be Kerry, like, and Mayo and Tyrone. So say we take Dublin out of the equation. Say we, like, you know, go the ultimate sacrifice and say, right, Dublin are ruining this. Let's take them out of the equation. What's the difference? Like, the difference is Kerry will win four of the next six All-Irelands. Mayo might sneak one and Tyrone will win one. Like, will everything be okay then? Like, you're going after the symptoms as opposed to going after the problem. And, you know, you take the Leinster situation, like a team winning 12 championships in a row in their province is a disaster situation, an absolute disaster situation. But if Dublin had not been there, like, which of the Leinster teams would have mounted a decent All-Ireland bid? Yeah, they would have won a Leinster title. Obviously they would. But there was no team in that period at all that would have done, because the evidence there will show you that none of them have gone through the back door after losing in Leinster and gone on to an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland final. Next year, Meath, Kildare and Dublin are in Division 2 of the league. The other eight teams in Leinster would be in Division 3 and Division 4. And there's only one or two of those teams that has to go through the hell of playing Dublin in the Leinster Championship every year anyway, and taking that big beating that is so dispiriting. So, you know, like, if people want to say, OK, we don't want Dublin there because we prefer if Kerry and Mayo would win the All-Ireland every year, that's fine. But dressing it up as kind of, you know, if you take Dublin out of it, all of a sudden the counties that are in Division 3, Division 4 that are in Leinster are going to flourish. That's just not going to happen. It's absolutely not going to happen.
Well, I don't think anybody's saying, you know, take Dublin out of the equation, but equally you can't dismiss the fact that population and funding are factors here.
They are absolutely factors, but so are so many other things. And this is my point. You know, I interview a lot of players from counties that aren't successful, and they will say, yeah, of course, if they had a bigger pick, you know, the potential to have a better team is there. Of course, if they had unlimited funds or more funds, the potential to have a better setup is there. But there are also huge areas for improvement. The inches to improve are all around them. Sometimes there's a substandard setup. And the whole thing, you tend to find, from my experience of talking to players in counties that are struggling, that is the vicious circle. Yeah, players could commit more time and effort and commitment in some situations. But if the environment isn't conducive to that, or you don't feel it's probably worth it, you're not going to do it. And if the environment, in some cases, a county board isn't really set up. So I think that there is an onus on the GAA to improve this from the bottom up. But focusing on the very, very top, like who wins the All-Ireland every year, particularly in a situation where Dublin were so close in all those finals. I know, like, when the biggest county with the biggest population and the biggest resources win the All-Ireland, it's not a cause for a national celebration anywhere outside of Dublin. That's the nature of this thing. But I'm not sure what it would solve if somehow we split Dublin in two tomorrow. I don't know. Like, the sacrifice of doing that, for instance, I think it would far outweigh any benefits to the All-Ireland series, because you'd be taking out, you know, one of the counties that's very readily identifiable for a lot of people. And you'd be taking out, I suppose, people's sense of place for, you know, a million or so people who are interested in the GAA in Dublin. So I suppose all these arguments get conflated and thrown into the same kind of melting pot. And the solution is always somehow that Dublin are the issue at play here. And in some cases, that might be the story. But I think there's far more. If every county, I'm not sure. For instance, we spoke about Mickey Hart and Loud a few times already this year. For instance, so in 2 years they bring in a really good trainer, a really good manager, and they've made huge improvements. So, like, are there many counties that are in Leinster, for instance, that could be said to be getting the most out of themselves if they went from a top to bottom review? How they coach underage players, how they bring them into setups, how they hold on to them, and how they nurture them, and the environment they create for them at the top level, and the expertise that they bring in. I'm not sure that there's many counties that could honestly hold their hands up and say, we're actually maxing out on everything we have. Because in that situation, well, then that's they're exactly the counties that you go after, and you try and fund more, and you bring, you know, you bring more people into it. But the thing about the population is it's only going to get bigger. So, like, I'm not really sure what people want to do about it, because and I think it's worth having the split Dublin debate now when it's not an issue, because, you know, the population change hasn't made any difference, but it just goes to show you what people's motivations were for having it in the first place. This was only an issue when Dublin were winning the All-Ireland every year. And now that they didn't win it last year, and the suspicion is that they're not going to do it this year, people aren't really bothered with it anymore.
So, Conor, surely you're not suggesting that people have an ulterior motive there. That must really piss you off, Philly. I mean, if people think that, you know, funding population automatically means success.
Yeah, like, and the big thing for me is I was there when we didn't win All-Ireland. So I was there with the just obviously there was 16 years before we won All-Ireland, but I was there 2008 where we were struggling to get over the line against the likes of Tyrone, against Kerry, Armagh and Mayo's to an extent before that. So yeah, look, I the key thing here for me is that there's so much, like, you have to remember the reason why there's so much transferable information around corporate companies and sport is their organizations. Okay. And in organizations, there's so many pieces that have to be right to get your ultimate vision or your goal, right? So my key thing here is the cause and effect. So we have the cause of a team doing really well. And as Conor mentioned, do we just look at that as an issue, or do we look at kind of, is there other things we can get better at here? And in every sport you look at, that's generally what happens. In business, that's what happens. You do well, your competitor looks at what you're doing and says, do you know what? We need to up our game here. They up their game, and then it happens the opposite way. So for me, and it's not one thing, I guarantee you, if you put that money that there was an argument that Dublin were getting too much money, but if you, and you know, obviously there's a reason where that money was going to in terms of the club level and stuff like that. Huge amount of that didn't go into intercounty, the intercounty setup, it went into the clubs. So whether you like that or not, that's a fact. Like, I didn't see that money, that didn't come into my pocket, it didn't come into our setup. Our setup was no different to most counties. You know, we had a backroom team full of volunteers. We didn't have a centre of excellence, and we're not complaining about that by any means. We had a pitch, we had a lovely changing room that we got changed in, and we had a meeting room. It was what we needed, you know, but we didn't, again, we haven't had somebody come out and say, you know, while this argument was going on, that we don't see the benefit of this. Like we've got the support, so we got, you know, looked after as best the management could give us and the county board could give us. But we didn't, what people are making it out to be in terms of we were nearly professionally paid, and we were getting meals and stuff like that outside of the meals we were getting in training and stuff like that, all these little things. This is what happens when you're successful. And I'm sure at any sport, when you see a team that's dominant, the other teams will look at that and say, well, how do we get there? But unfortunately, we have this narrative in GAA, particularly football, that no, we shouldn't really look towards getting better and looking at the things they've done to get better. What we'll do is we look for excuses to kind of look at why they've been successful, which is, that's in my eyes, that's disrespectful. And that's, and again, as I said, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I'm giving you my opinion as a player, what I've seen, what I've benefited from, and my opinion on these arguments are, I just don't think they're, there's a huge amount of the people that are arguing that those points that have been in the change rooms of a successful All-Ireland team.
So you're saying basically that the huge backroom team that you would have had, that they would have been made up of volunteers, because that would have been one of the arguments that you had the money to have such a large backroom team. And, you know, we also have heard like this kind of sense of oneness that Jim Gavin would have created with you, and like that was coming and being driven by him as well.
I don't think if Jim Gavin had a pot of money there and he brought in the best coach in the country to train us, that'll have an impact, but it doesn't necessarily transfer to us winning All Ireland. So that's what I'm talking about. It's so diverse. There's so many complex issues within that. Like it's the buy-in of the players, it's the environment, it's the culture, it's how you communicate. There's like it's layered up like so much that money can't be the fix for it, like, you know. And there's lots of people that I'd say, well, you look at soccer and you look at the, you know, the teams that are doing well in England, and you've got two kind of opposite teams. You know, Liverpool are doing really well at the minute, but they haven't spent as much as Manchester City, like, you know. So you look at the, if you were Man City, you'd be kind of saying, well, hold on, what do Liverpool, if Liverpool win the league and the Champions League this year, what have they got that Man City don't have? Is it culture? Is it a certain kind of environment? These are things you just can guess, like, you know. But we can't say for definite as facts that the reason why ultimately a sporting team or an individual wins is just money. It's not just money. Like, it just can't be that.
Yeah, and I suppose, Conor, we see that as well with the likes of the Dublin Hurlers. That's also the counter-argument to the money argument, is that, you know, they haven't done as well as the footballers. You know, the Dublin Minor footballers haven't won. So there is that argument there as well to back up what Philly's saying.
Well, the Dublin example is a funny one, because people talk about money and then they talk about the Dublin senior footballers, and like the money that Dublin get, you know, from the GAA, and the reason that they get it is because they have the biggest population, and there are large, large swathes of the city in the area of the biggest population where people don't play GAA, and there's no tradition of GAA, because, you know, like tradition is the best driver for the participation of Gaelic games. You know, like you can see it all around the country, you can see it in certain parts of Dublin. But when you have new developments of people who have no link to one another, and in some cases no link to this country, it costs an awful lot of money to get Gaelic game going in that situation. Now, I understand why people in other counties don't really care or see the value in that, but that's what all the money that goes into Dublin GAA gets spent on. And you can see it all over the place. It's to develop pitches. It's to get land in a part of the country where the land is the most expensive. And the GPOs have been a great success. But again, I think people have this notion that GPO or a GDA, or is that what they're called now? They have a couple of different names, the Games Promotion Officers. But in a lot of cases, what they do in Dublin, and I just know this from experience, is the link between the school, the primary school, and the local GAA club, which is like as natural to a lot of people in a lot of parts of Ireland as the link between the post office and the pub. You know, you go from one to the other. But they forge that link. You know, they bring kids who could, you know, may never play any kind of sport, and they keep them interested. So the GPOs in Dublin, and I know this for a fact, their biggest benefit of their existence and the expansion of those roles is in driving up numbers. It's not that they hand over, you know, 30 elite level 11-year-olds over to the club and say, now you can go off and sort of coach them to win a Féile or a Dublin Minor title. That's not what they do. So that's why, like why have Dublin hurlers not been successful, you know, to the same extent as the Dublin footballers? Because there's not the same culture of hurling in Dublin as there is in football. Like Dublin have been very competitive of underage, but in hurling, but they still haven't won a minor or an under 21 All Ireland, let alone a senior All Ireland. So, you know, like if they did win a senior All Ireland really quickly, you'd merely be kind of worried. You know, had they won one 10 years ago when the money started to flow in, then you could have said, well, look, you know, if we start pumping money in everywhere else, maybe everyone would be competitive. But like what you're talking about is getting people involved and that pathway. And like Dublin were hugely successful at underage level before like Philly's team started winning senior All-Irelands. They won, was it 4 or 5 under 21 or under 20 All-Irelands in the space of 10 years. That level of success has kind of dropped off, not for any sort of obvious reason other than the crops coming through haven't been quite as strong. And like, it's absolutely inevitable that that would be reflected at senior level. Like, the, you know, the idea that you just churn numbers in, and you know, it's a bit like the monkeys with the typewriters. You know, if you put enough people through the system, one of them will turn into Brian Fenton. That's just not a guarantee. But like, what it does guarantee is that I don't think we'll have a situation over the next 20 years where Dublin aren't all Ireland contenders. I don't think we'll ever go back to the days where Dublin will be losing first round of the Leinster Championship and, you know, floating around, you know, out around, you know, 10th place in the overall rankings. But the idea that, you know, if the money and the population argument was fact, well, given the way the population trends are going in this country, actually the last 10 years would only have been the tip of the iceberg. And I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, Andy McEntee seemed to be feeding into that population argument from what he said a few years ago when he was on that infamous Sunday game discussion with Pat Gilroy.
Yeah, I thought it was a strange thing for him to do at the time, given that he was, you know, active Meath manager and is still kind of Meath manager. And like, you know, Meath have a huge population as well. So, you know, if you have to apply the same principles, but like Andy McEntee will know at ground level in Meath that like Meath have made, are one of the counties that have made huge strides at underage level, having initially been left behind, you know, when the big surge was coming on from Dublin and other counties into how to harness and put a structure on your underage talent to make sure that they do find an easy path to the elite level. Meath were actually originally left behind. They have corrected that now. So I'd imagine the Meath manager in 5 or 6 years' time, if it's still Andy McEntee, will have far more to work with than he has done. Now, if the population argument checks out in Dublin, like there are more GAA players, registered GAA players in Cork, and Cork aren't sort of at the top of the pile at the moment in hurling or football. So I think you have to apply it across the board, you know?
Yeah, so is it almost that no excuse culture, Philly, for, you know, the likes of Meath? But, you know, I can see where they're coming from as well.
Well, first of all, if my manager was saying the reason why you're getting beaten over the years is because of population and money, well, then what's the point in actually showing up? Because you can't control that, can you, if you're a player? So if I was a Meath player and my manager was saying, this team that's beating us, or this team we're playing next, you basically are not going to win because, like, they have more money and they have a bigger population. What's the point of going out and playing for that manager? So that's quite difficult to. I would imagine if Pat was my manager and Pat was on the discussion panel with him, if Pat was there and he was saying those things, I'd be saying to Pat, hold on a second here. Like, that's not the case. We are here to, you know, we put the time and effort in, and you put the time and effort in, and this is sport. This is the enjoyable part of sport and the complexities of sport, that you pull a group together, you pull an environment in, they put the group in that in a really high optimal environment to help it succeed and get over the line. And that journey itself is the special part. You know, you don't need to know how to go on that journey, but you can mess around with the theory of it and get to a stage where you kind of say to yourself, you know what, wasn't that fun at the end of it? Whereas if you change the rules because someone's successful, where's the fun in that?
Did you ever talk about it, Philly? Like within, like did you feel it ever no. kind of undermined or tarnished anything, or did you use it as a motivating factor?
No, we never. We honest to God, we now. I'd say if we did, we never spoke about it because we knew what it took to win in All Ireland. We knew all the pieces of the jigsaw, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, imagine somebody telling you how to do something that they have never done. Like, imagine somebody else saying, this is how you go and win an All-Ireland, and you've won an All-Ireland, and you're saying, how can you tell me how to win an All-Ireland when you've never done it? But yet you're coming up with these two reasons why I've won the All-Ireland, but you've never done it. How does that make sense? That's what I'm saying. People's opinions are totally entitled to opinions and conversations around, you know, how teams are successful and how teams are not successful are ripe in the GA world. But there should never be, you'll never hear somebody come out that's won an All-Ireland and say, I won an All-Ireland because of money and population. Never. Have you ever heard that? Never will you ever hear that. So for me, as someone that is very lucky to win one and know what it takes to win it, I can also give my opinion that I don't believe money and population are the main reasons that teams win All-Ireland.
Will this be back on the table, Conor, again this year?
I will if Dublin win the All-Ireland. That's probably the short answer to the question. Although I think there'll be a different story if Dublin win the All-Ireland. Like, I can't see them steamrolling their way all the way to Sam Maguire this year. So I think when, you know, if they have close games with, I mean, at this stage, it looks very likely that there's going to be an All-Ireland semi-final between Dublin and Kerry. And I just cannot imagine one team steamrolling the other in that game. So, like, I don't know whether the whole conversation will kind of settle down, you know, if Dublin are kind of part of the pack as opposed to what they seem to be for the say the second half of the decade when they were going for five in a row, when they actually seem to be out in front of the pack. Because I can get it, like, it's so dispiriting. Like, it's so dispiriting for other counties. And even the Mayo thing, like, you know, they were kind of the nation's sweethearts when it came to Gaelic football. Everybody was winning them over the line. And I think everybody felt their pain. And the way it was kind of expressed there was that people wanted to see the back of Dublin. But like the big thing about, you know, the money aspect of it when it comes to, so like the problem is, like, as we all know, the GAA inter-county teams, there's a huge amount of secrecy around them. There's massive secrecy around how they train, how they prepare, what it is they do. Trying to get a manager to answer a straight question about something that goes on in their setup now is, so there's a value on secrecy. And the issue there is if you don't tell anybody what to do, and then you keep winning left, right, and center, people will presuppose or they'll make assumptions about what you do. But like, I'm not speaking on behalf of Philly here, but I would imagine the most influential people to Dublin winning five in a row, not in any particular order, were Jim Gavin, Stephen Cluxton, Declan Darcy, and maybe Jason Sherlock. And they weren't there because of, you know, they weren't there because of money. You know, I'd be fairly certain that none of them picked up any checks at the end of the month. So, yeah, like I understand why people kind of go for the obvious reasons, because they don't know anything else about it. But
just like Gooch said, it was a tipping point, Philly. So why would he say it? Like, he knows everything about the game. Why would he say that it has reached tipping point when he's won All Ireland's?
Sinead, I don't know. You'd have to ask him, to be honest. It's not something that I would be saying if Kerry won an All Ireland this year, you know, because obviously when it does change, which he knows has changed in the past, it was Kerry that were winning the All-Irelands in his time, and nobody was coming out saying it about him. And I know Dublin had won more and stuff like that, and obviously the narrative around the population, etc., and the money spent. But for me, that's something I can't answer for him, like, you know. But I would just add to what Connor said. He said the important people around it, and I'd add to that. I'd add the backroom team, like, we had such a strong culture and we had so much respect for a kit man, for an analysis guy, we had so much respect for a scout that was going to watch other games. I really mean that. And every time we spoke after any game and said that we know we're representing a wider community, that also follows back to the club in terms of the coaches that we've had throughout our juvenile kind of development. They're, every person I've just mentioned there are volunteers. Every single person there we've mentioned are volunteers. There might be the odd person within the backroom team, an S&C or a psychologist to an extent. We didn't use them massively. A nutritionist, physio, that would normally have to be paid to have, you know, that's their job. You won't get them in otherwise. If you don't, you just can't like get professionals in for free if you want to get a certain standard from those professions. But a huge amount of volunteers. So that money that you see, the numbers you see, and that's kind of kickstart this conversation around finances, that money doesn't really translate into the inter-county scene in terms of those individuals getting paid. Huge amount of the work that goes in are by volunteers. And nobody can argue that. Any county that comes out and says they pay their backroom team, there's nobody that can say it. It's just not possible. Like, nobody would do it. So having the benefit of somebody volunteering, self-motivated to come in for a bigger purpose culturally, because that's their county, that's their team, that's what they're there to do. They're there to bring that level of energy up, not based off money, but based off the love of the county or the team.
So what do you imagine the approach will be, Connor, as we wrap, just like by Meath coming into this game this weekend?
I actually don't know. It's the first meeting of these teams where I find it hard to read, because I think Dublin are in a small bit of transition in terms of their style. They kicked the ball a lot the last day against Wexford, and I think that is a very deliberate thing. they were working on that early on in the league, and they were getting turned over a lot. So I think it's something that they've honed. Whereas Mead are a pretty kind of a hard running team. They're a very young team. And I think Andy McIntyre has been there a fair while, but he's nearly on his third team. He's had a huge turnover of players. So really, like, these players, I think, are going to be the players, some of the Mead forwards that are there. You know, fellas like Jordy Morrison. Like, there's going to be a couple more of them who will be, I think, the Mead players who eventually go and beat Dublin, but I still think they're probably a bit raw now. I suppose they'll probably, but like, the funny thing about these games is there's very little tactically that you can't predict anymore. Every team sets up the same way nowadays. Like Derry a couple of weeks ago against Tyrone were slightly different. They got so many bodies back, but everybody just plays with a plus one, just to make sure that they can't get caught on the counter-attack. And then it just depends on your turnover rate, your scoring rate, your shot rate. But I just can't see it this weekend. I think with Dublin, if Brian Fenton is back to his best, as he hinted against Wexford, and if Conn O'Callaghan obviously is back to a level of fitness, I just think Dublin have far too much firepower for me. Because, as I said, even though Andy McAtee's been there a while, he has had to keep... I mean, this is really his third team. And I think they're probably a small bit raw yet to be thinking about beating Dublin.
Billy?
I think it comes back to the same point I made for the Dublin-Wexford game. It depends on what Dublin team shows up. You know, can they build on their rootless performance that they did against Wexford? So again, it comes back to the same thought process of, we're playing against ourselves here. Can we beat our standards from the last game with a better opposition? I would think Mead are in a better opposition than Wexford. The league format shows that. So from a Dublin perspective, it's that. If Mead have a purple patch like they did in the third quarter the last time they played them, how do they deal with that? Mead, can they contain certain individuals, as Conor mentioned? Can they contain Fenton? Can they contain Conn O'Callaghan? And if that happens, then what Dublin players step up? So you can contain those boys, but then if a couple of others step up, there's a couple of other lads to come into the squad that haven't played yet, like Paddy Small, who I think can light up the championship this year with game time. So, for me, containing individuals, containing Dublin, and then can they look, I suppose what Mead will be hoping for when they're looking at footage of Dublin this year is, like, can they expose Dublin like Monaghan exposed them, like Armagh exposed them, in terms of the space in front of the full back line. I'm not sure Dublin will fall into that trap again. But for me, I do think it's all about Dublin and the standards they set up against themselves.
I think there's a point as well to be made that the youth for Mead is probably a good thing, because like Mead have had some really bad days against Dublin in the last few years, and the days where they could easily be kind of scarring for players. But like, you know, fellas like Jordan Morris and Jack O'Connor and Jason Scully, and I think Shane Walsh might have only come off the bench the last day against Wicklow. They're pretty fresh now. And I think, you know, to get a monkey off your back as big as Dublin are for me, I think you need players who haven't gone through that too often in the past and will show up on Sunday in Croke Park without any kind of psychological hang-ups about Dublin or any scarring from previous defeats.
Okay, we'll see how we go, Philly and Connor. Thanks for that. You can read more from Philly in his column on Saturday's Irish Independent. Monday's Throw-In with Will and Michael will review this weekend's championship. You can rate, listen, and follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week.